you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. Today's episode is a continuation on last week's episode number 74 with Dr. Sandy Kaufman. Last time we discussed a lot of the basics and the overviews of aging and what's changed around the science since she released her 2018 book. Today, we're going much deeper into the most promising new molecules and molecular agents that Sandy has been researching and included in her new book. If this all sounds too complicated, I totally understand. We were a bit rushed on time for these interviews, but you can pick up any of her books, and Sandy does a good job of breaking it down for the layperson and putting in terms that we can all understand and gradually building on the science. So whether you're new to the world of longevity or an advanced bioharmonizer, I think you'll get something good out of this one. You'll find some ingredients that you may have never heard of, and you can use this conversation to guide your research. Some of the ones that we covered in this conversation include magnesium threonate, astaxanthin, resveratrol versus pterostilbene, delphinidin, norengin, fisetin, spermidine, alpha-ketoglutarate, andrographil. We talked about hacks to grow bone faster, which can help post-injury or if you want to get through braces faster. We talked about the crucial anti-aging non-supplement, the one type of fish that Sandy prefers to buy factory farmed, and then more on the philosophical side. Why focus on longevity medicine and improving our health spans? I certainly struggle to pronounce some of these newer longevity molecules, so I hope you're able to get a laugh out of my mispronunciations. The links and show notes to this one will be at mindbodypeak.com/75. As you've probably noticed, I've been experimenting a bit with shorter form interviews, and when they're longer, breaking them up in two, if possible. Let me know your preference, because I'm still on the fence. And if you find this one interesting, go ahead and share it with a friend, family member, a coworker, or anyone that you think could benefit from this information. Okay, I hope you enjoy and learn something new. And we're back with Dr. Sandy Kaufman. Sandy, let's pick up where we left off and let's discuss some of the specific agents. You listed 28 in your new book, and there's a couple that I want to cover with you, but are there any that stand out to you as especially useful or interesting?
Yeah, there's several. You know, we always have our pets, right? We shouldn't. I think, I don't know if it was you or someone asked me once upon a time if I could be a molecule. What was my favorite molecule? I don't know. I was like, I want to be astaxanthin because I thought it was so cool. But I don't get to choose that one anymore because that was book one. So book two, I think magnesium threonate is incredibly cool. Mm. A lot of people are on magnesium, and the magnesium has to be complexed to something, right? There's oxalate, you know, like there's a million of them. Yeah. 60% of the population in the Western world is magnesium deficient. So, of course, this is a fantastic idea. And then the question is, which one do you choose? And they all have their various things that they do. But my absolute favorite is magnesium threonate. And the reason for that is it's the only one that gets through the blood-brain barrier into your head. And that is extraordinarily important because it increases neural plasticity in your hippocampus. Okay. So it actually increases memory ability. And it's an anti-inflammatory in your brain, right? So as you get older and you worry about neuroinflammation, you sort of get a twofer in your brain with magnesium threonate. And then it also helps around the rest of your body in terms of all the wonderful things that magnesium does anyway, right? So magnesium actually helps support your DNA you know, three-dimensional structure. And then she says a variety of other things as well. So I think that 3 and 8 is just sort of the way to go. So that one's kind of cool.
Yeah. And before we continue, I actually want to rewind and go back to your previous book, because two of the things that, one of them you mentioned, but another one also were an impetus for me to start exploring this myself. So we'll talk about astaxanthin first and then also go on to the next one that's become hot as resveratrol has become less hot, and that is pterostilbene.
Mm-hmm. So astaxanthin, it's the coolest molecule. People always think it's exotic and it's exciting, and it's not, right? It's, if you look at bird baths, and I live in Miami, so we don't have that many of them, but if you're in the northern area and you look at a bird bath and it's the green slime, those are the cells that make astaxanthin. So if you physiologically stress them, salinity, temperature, however you want to stress out a cell, or just, you know, be mean to it, it makes this fantastic orangish, reddish goo. And this molecule therefore protects that cell from the physiologic stresses. So it does the same thing for us. And in fact, this molecule sort of gets taken into all of the marine systems. So if you think of anything that's pink out there in the ocean or the wetlands, it's probably because it consumes astaxanthin. So shrimp, krill, roseate spoonbills, anything pink is astaxanthin.
Salmon.
So exactly. So when I go to the grocery store, I just look for the pinkest piece. I always think it's funny because it always says artificially colored. And I'm thinking, yeah, because they feed it astaxanthin. I'm like, yes, get the cheaper, pinkest stuff. Yeah. So I, you know, people are like, oh, that's not natural. I don't care. It's cheap astaxanthin.
Is that how they color it, with astaxanthin?
Yeah, they give the fish astaxanthin.
Oh, it's not food coloring.
No, it's astaxanthin.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, right. You get a twofer. You get fish and you get astaxanthin. Kind of pretty cool. And so what astaxanthin does is it gets into your body and it travels into your mitochondria and it beds itself in the wall. And it is an incredibly potent free radical scavenger. It sits there for 24 hours and then you excrete it. There are zero side effects. I mean, I guess if you took too much, you'd theoretically turn, you know, orange, but it's never happened. I know that it works, and it's a free radical scavenger, and it also increases your endogenous ability to increase your own free radical scavengers. So that's kind of cool. And it's an anti-inflammatory. So it is just an insanely fantastic molecule that has absolutely no downside.
And the big reason I started using it is because I've heard it dubbed nature's sunscreen, and with a low inflammatory diet, in addition with krill oil or some kind of rich source of astaxanthin, maybe even higher levels than that, I noticed that I can spend a lot more time in the sun without getting burnt.
Oh, no, 100%. In fact, people, like, I tell them that and they think I'm nuts. But I always talk about, you know, my daughter is an avid tennis player, and she's a ginger. So she's bright red hair and very pale skin. And if she doesn't take her astaxanthin, she comes back with a burn. If I buy the cheap stuff, you know, she burns. And so this is, you know, she's my product tester. And it's really funny. So now when they go on trips with their friends, because, you know, we live in Miami and they're all out on boats and jet skis, and they're all like, she's like the drug distributor of astaxanthin. And in some ways, as a mom, I'm like, oh, my God, you know, don't hand out stuff to other kids. And on the other hand, I'm like, well, you know, it's non-toxic and you're protecting their skin. Yeah. So I think it's OK.
Their parents should be thanking you.
They should. Right. I don't know if anyone notices or cares, but it's sort of like the what we all do around here.
And then the other one people tend to neglect or maybe haven't even heard of is pterostilbene.
Yes. So what you're referring to, of course, is the never-ending battle between resveratrol and pterostilbene, because they're both some of the most potent sirtuin-1 activators that we have. So it's crucial that you take one or the other. The war, of course, is which one to take. All of the studies have traditionally been done on resveratrol. That, you know, you go back to the French paradox of, you know, it's in red wine, blah, 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 blah. The problem, of course, is that the bioavailability is terrible. So unless you find an extremely good, highly bioavailable one, it's not so great. So the molecular cousin, of course, is pterostilbene. It comes from blueberries. People are like, oh, I'm just gonna eat blueberries. But I think I calculated you have to eat like 5 gallons of blueberries a day. So, which then, right, then it goes back to the Willy Wonka thing where you become a giant blueberry and it looks ridiculous. But anyway, so they're molecular cousins. They're very, very, very similar. Fewer studies, but the studies that are done seem to indicate that it's just more efficacious. So I'm a believer in pterostilbene. But then, of course, there was one study that suggested that it could theoretically make your lipid profile a whiff worse. So then people that had lipid issues kind of freaked out about that and went back to resveratrol. So now the question is, which one is good? If you have no lipid problems, I recommend the pterostilbene. If you do, go to the resveratrol. But if you do that, make sure you find one that is bioavailable. And there's the ever-increasing war of how to package these things, right? Is it in a nanomycel? Is it micronized? You know, blah, 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 blah. But I love the fact that there's this escalating war because we just get to benefit from it. So it's fantastic.
Certainly. Okay, those are the two big ones from the last book. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of the newer ones or ones that you've mentioned in your new book, and you've already alluded to this a few minutes ago, and that was delphinidin.
Yeah, so delphinidin. So I like to travel. And before COVID hit, I was in Argentina climbing a big mountain down there, and everyone was talking about the Macai berry. Because, you know, it's regional and every place around the globe has their own cool thing. So this was my discovery down there. So the Macai berry has this wonderful anthocyanin called delphinidin. And it is one of the most potent water-soluble free radical scavengers that we have. Completely non-toxic. It's amazing. And so the darker the berry, the more anthocyanins we have. And there's probably six or seven specific types of anthocyanins, but delphinidin is huge. It's amazing. So when people ask me like what free radical scavengers should you take, I've decided that you probably need for a well-rounded protocol, both fat-soluble and water-soluble. So I think that the astaxanthin covers the fat-soluble and the delphinidin covers the water-soluble.
And why is that? Why do you want one of each?
Just because it gets to different areas of your tissues.
Gotcha.
And they're metabolized differently, and you can take them sort of separately. You know, the half-lives are, astaxanthin is pretty long, delphinidin is probably a little bit less because it's water-soluble. And also, if you don't want to take it with food or not take it with food, there's some slightly different categorizations, but they're both extraordinarily potent. And I call it the 1-2 punch of free radical scavenging.
Are you worried about getting too much, too high levels of these?
Nah.
What about like the beneficial free radicals, the reactive oxygen species and all that stuff that results from exercise and certain hormetic stressors?
So we have so many billions and billions and billions of free radicals in us. There is absolutely no way you're going to extinguish them all. You're not. And you're absolutely right. There are things that are beneficial that free radicals can do. So, for example, in your white cells, you create free radicals to destroy bacteria and viruses. Right? We know that. We know that they're used as cellular signaling. Between cells or even within cells. So we know that to a certain degree it's beneficial. And you're right, exercise creates them, which is called, helps create muscle hypertrophy and blah, 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 blah. But there is just no way that you can possibly get rid of all of your free radicals. Mm-hmm. And this becomes more and more true the older you get, right? Yeah, so yeah. When you're young, your ability to make endogenous free radical scavenger is incredibly high, right? So the risk is low. But as you get older and these enzymes fail, it becomes significantly more important, for many reasons. Number one, you're destroying your DNA, you're destroying your lipids. They're nasty to lipids, right? And this is a big deal. It's called lipid peroxidation, and your brain is mostly lipids. So lack of free radical scavenging is a huge contribution to neurodegenerative disease as you get old, which is also incredibly important why you find things that get through the blood-brain barrier.
There's one more I want to cover, and then I'll let you choose from the remaining ones to see which you find the most interesting. And the next one is naringin.
Naringenin. It's ancient. It comes from orange peels. We have known about it for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Chinese medicine uses it. And I can never remember exactly what they call it in Chinese, but it basically translates into fixes broken bones. So it is incredibly potent, among other things, osteoblastic activator, right? So in terms of bone, your bone is constantly turning over. So your osteoclasts are getting rid of old bone and your osteoblasts are making new bone. When you are young, This is going on incredibly, incredibly quickly. Like you can set the bone of a kid in like, you know, 3 weeks, it's fixed and it's fine. The older you get, the slower the process is. So as you get older, your osteoclasts become more active. So you're breaking down a ton of bone. It's also associated with inflammatory processes. So as the inflammatory cytokines sort of shoot up, they activate the cytoclast or the osteoclast. And so you're just breaking down bone at a huge speed. The osteoblasts, the builders of bone, sort of get tired. It's sort of interesting. Your mesenchymal stem cells that become bone cells also get lazy. And apparently it's easier for them to become fat cells versus bone cells, right? So, of course, as you get older, the last thing you want is more fat and less bone, but this is what happens. So naringenin is an osteoblastic activator. It increases the production of cells that make bone. And that is absolutely crucial for maintaining your skeletal health as you get older. And then, of course, it's a free radical scavenger. It does a whole lot of other things. But like that's its superpower.
Sounds like there's a lot of free radical scavengers on this list.
Oh, it's funny. Most plant-based things are free radical scavengers. It's kind of like the minimum entry into being on the list. But if it's only a free radical scavenger, it doesn't make the list anymore because we have tons. So now things have to have like special powers sort of qualify.
So I'm trying to figure out when you want to use this, because if you have a greater level of osteoblasts than osteoclasts and you're young and healthy, maybe you broke a bone, would you be worried about taking that also and getting like growing bone spurs or something like that, where maybe you're growing too much?
So excellent question. It's not for the youth, you're right, unless something's broken. Interestingly enough, here's a dumb thing, because my life is frequently focused on my kids. One of them had braces and she just really wanted to make her tooth movement go faster. And one of the things that the jawbone has to do is it has to, as the forces on the jaw, as you move teeth, right, you are breaking down the bone and then you're making new bone. And the ability to make new bone is sort of the rate limiting factor as to how fast you can move your teeth around, right? So she started, you know, taking a whole lot of osteoblastic activators and she was able to get through braces way faster.
Oh, that's cool.
Right? Sort of like this, like, you know, like let's cheat the system sort of deal. So if you have broken bones and that sort of thing when you're young, it's probably useful. But in general, it's probably best reserved for, you know, older people as you start worrying about bone density.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we'll go on to your pick between salicidricide and ellagic acid.
So ellagic acid. So that comes from, it's a beautiful molecule. It looks like a snowflake. You know what? It's come from pomegranate. Everyone loves pomegranate. So actually I'm gonna skip and give you a few things that I think are necessary. Fisetin. Fisetin is horribly underrated and it does amazingly good things in every category. It's one of the highest, if not the highest ranking agent. And I'm not going to pour into every detail, but one of the coolest things about fisetin is there are only two things on the market right now to get rid of senescent cells. There's quercetin and fisetin. So fisetin, if you are over 40 or you have, you know, injuries from sports incidents, or you've got, you know, status post radiation or chemotherapy from cancer, or if you're hurt everywhere, you have a huge accumulation of senescent cells. And it is extraordinarily important to clear those out. And because we only have two things on the market that can do it, it's just an extremely important thing. Quercetin, it was in the first book, comes from onions. Fisetin actually comes from strawberries. So if people like to remain natural, that's great. Because it does amazing things in every category, I usually recommend a small dose every day for like the other categories. But for senescent cell eradication, you need a pretty decent high dose 2 days out of every month or two to sort of like help eradicate those cells. So I think that's like incredibly crucial.
Yeah. I was doing some research for a post I wrote on fisetin, and I noticed that there's a large variation between manufacturers. Someone recommend you take it every day. Someone recommend you take it like once or twice a month. And of course, different doses, different delivery mechanisms. But I believe that's one of the bioflavonoids or something like that suffers from really poor absorption. So do you prefer any like preparations?
I hate to promote specific companies, but there's a company called Rev Genetics, and they have a fantastic way of encapsulating these things that increases the bioavailability. Mm. So ones that are super important, that's the brand that I use. And I use their quercetin, their fisetin, and their curcumin.
Mm, I see.
Actually, the resveratrol as well, just because of the way that they package it. But depending on what the point of the product is this sort of, that's why it's either a small dose every day or a huge dose intermittently.
Mm, gotcha.
And I actually think that both are important. So I take a little bit every day and then, like, you know, my bolus dose every month or so.
And that's most important for someone over the age of what, 40-ish?
Probably 40-ish, you know, unless you're one of these, like, you know, childhood athletes just like walking around with a ton of like torn ligaments, sore knees, blah, blah, blah. But if you're like a standard person, probably over 40-ish. Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to point out is spermidine. And you talked about it a little bit earlier. And again, spermidine does two crucial things that other things don't. Number one, it protects your DNA. The molecule of spermidine is a linear molecule, and it is positively charged with some nitrogens in it. But importantly, your DNA is a long negatively charged chain with a major and a minor groove. And in a test tube, if you add the two, spermidine goes into those grooves and protects the DNA. I like to think of it as a bubble wrapping phenomena, whereby, at least in a test tube, it protects that DNA from exogenous harm, like UV radiation or chemical assaults or that sort of thing. And whereas we're not proven it yet in a cell, it does significantly seem to reduce risk of some DNA damage. So that's the only molecule that I know of that does that. So that's crucial. And the other thing spermidine does is an incredibly potent autophagy activator. And we really want to increase autophagy because it's a way of telling our cell to recycle. Well, it is recycling. And that is associated with longevity. Mm-hmm. So I tried to pick out agents in this book that sort of like does things that nothing else does. So those are my favorites.
Yeah. Okay. How would you recommend, I'm just thinking to people in my life who would be interested in some of these supplements, but maybe not taking 20, 30, 40, 50 a day. How would you recommend they prioritize, like using your book or your resources? Any recommendations there?
Oh, absolutely. So in book two, I should have done this in one and I just didn't think about it because I didn't actually think anyone was going to read it. And now that I know that people actually do. So book two, there's a chart. And it comes from the idea that everyone would say, okay, well, I really don't want to age or be healthier, but I'm significantly concerned about like my brain or my intestine or my this or my that. So there's a chart in book two. And it's sort of like, you know, on the bottom or on the vertical is all of the agents. And then across the horizontal top, it has different body systems. So there's your gut, there's your brain, all of the things you're sort of concerned about. And it'll tell you exactly which ones we know help in which systems. And it's only based on the evidence that's available. I mean, something may help in a different system. I just don't know about it because no one's done the study. But in terms of absolute known studies, so if you're interested in your brain and you want to take three things, go to the list, find, you know, the five things that helps with the brain, and then go back to the numbers chart and pick the ones that have the highest number rating system.
I see. And it's okay to have overlap there. You don't worry about having three things that impact the brain with, say, a super high score.
No, because they're all going to work in different ways, right? So, for example, andrographolides, one of my absolute favorites, it gets into your brain. It absolutely gets through the blood-brain barrier because it's water-soluble and it's known to just absolutely reduce neuroinflammation, right? Mm-hmm. And then you know, throw in threonate that increases hippocampal plasticity, right? So if you can find, you know, three or four that do things slightly differently, they're going to help your brain and you're worried about Alzheimer's or neurodegenerative disease, then that's sort of the way to go. Unfortunately, you know, I just assume that I can't do this for everybody, but people are reasonably intelligent. So all the information and the cross-referencing is there. And people are pretty darn good about putting these things together.
So far, we've talked mostly about the agents you like for longevity purposes and their, I guess, specialties, things they do well, and where there's overlap, where they're separate mechanisms.
What about for the under 40 crowd that are interested in better performance, better recovery? You've briefly alluded to some of their benefits, how they like might help, that kind of stuff. But are there any particular ones that you like there?
So for muscle, alpha-ketoglutarate, of course, is top choice. Bodybuilders have known about this forever because it really, you know, it hypes up your muscle. But it also does incredible things around your body as well. It helps your brain, it helps your gut, it helps, it's just innumerable body parts. So that one's in there. And the way I sort of remember that is sort of funny. If you look at the molecule itself, it looks like the five Olympic rings. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, it's sort of like the cheat system. Ketoglutarate can be complexed to many different things. It can be calcium, it can be this, it can be that. In the book, it says alpha-ketoglutarate. But if you're older, you want the arginine ketoglutarate, because if you get the arginine in there, it also helps with other things with aging. And that's in there if you read that chapter. So that one's definitely helpful. Leucine, amino acid, is also extraordinarily important for building muscle. I like to think of it as the controversial amino acid, because it is amazing for building muscle and health all around the body. So if you're young, that's the way to go. The problem with longevity is that it's an mTOR activator. And generally with longevity, we want mTOR deactivators. Yeah. But if you want to maintain your body mass without having to take every amino acid, you know, that's the way to go.
What about on the cognitive performance side? Like anything you do that increases oxygenation or nutrient delivery or reduces neuroinflammation, that'll all help. Are there any other like specific agents that are important for someone in their under 40 years to consider?
So that gets into the whole big realm of neurotropics. And I just have to go back to something that you kind of said, increase oxygen to your brain. Your brain, assuming that you are a healthy, normal human, gets plenty of oxygen. If you are old and decrepit and you've had strokes and you've got coronary disease and atherosclerotic disease going into your head, then you worry about oxygen delivery to your head. But stem cells are extraordinarily sensitive to oxygen levels. So if you decide that you're going to go sit in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber and or go to an oxygen bar, it's really bad for your stem cells. And that's true all over your body and especially in your brain. So that is really the last thing you want to do. So unless your doctor says you really need oxygen because your sats are low, don't do it. Don't do it at all.
Yeah, I mean, oxygen is oxidative, and a lot of the goal of these compounds are to stop oxidation. So that makes sense.
Yeah. And people don't think about that. There's the one study, of course, that showed that, very complex system of high oxygen and the normal oxygen increased your telomerase levels or your telomere length. But it's very specific. And unfortunately, oxygen is harmful in most categories. So it's just, it's jumping into a hyperoxygen chamber is just not such a brilliant idea. Hmm.
Okay, let's transition now to more of the non-agent related things we can do to improve our health span and our quality of life, because surely there's a lot of lifestyle habits and other non-compounds that we can do, I guess.
Well, the easiest ones are obviously the things that everyone talks about, right? It's diet and exercise. Exercise is without a doubt, hands down, the best way to maintain health and longevity. People always want to know exactly how many minutes. And the answer is, I don't know. I am not an exercise physiologist. I don't know. But you clearly need resistance for development of tissues and maintenance of blood supply and that sort of thing. And you clearly need cardiovascular, you know, to have all the benefits of that sort of thing. I'm not an expert in that, but they're definitely demonstrated that exercise every day will increase your health and lifespan. And in terms of diet, despite the fact that I do eat a donut every day, I do not suggest that other people do it. It's a bit on the ridiculous side, and I recognize that. Caloric restriction, of course, on the absolute other end of the spectrum, is definitely demonstrated to sort of do well in every category of aging. Then, of course, people want to be obsessed about like how many hours. And the answer is, I don't know. There's lots of different studies showing, is it 12? Is it, you know, is it 16? Is it 18? Do I have to not eat for 5 days and be a rip-roaring, horrible human being? You know, the answer is, I don't know. But caloric restriction definitely helps, as well as just eating normal foods at a reasonable level.
What's your take, Sandy, on like pulsing? Like, say, pulsing a couple days of hypocaloric and then going to a day of hypercaloric?
The answer is I don't know. I just don't know. I'm not a diet specialist. Sure. What I do sort of believe in is that one of the things about longevity is the fact that it allows you to be healthier and it allows you to have time in your life to do things that are fun, right? And if you spend every day wondering about if you're going to eat today, what you're going to eat today, and I'm not going to eat tomorrow, but on Thursday I get to eat this, it sort of becomes a whiff obsessive. Now, yeah. Some people really enjoy like all of that. Like I've met people, they're so proud. They don't eat for 5 days and then they sit down and they gorge and da, 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 da. That honestly sounds miserable to me. I like to, you know, do my exercise, eat reasonably normally, pop my supplements, and then live my life as if I'm not doing anything else, because that's not what life is about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's finding what works for you and not stressing out too much over some of the small things that may or may not matter.
And the other thing that's really funny is these people were competing to see who could sleep the best. Mm-hmm. Right? They all got their wearables and like they'd wake up the next morning and compare their numbers. Like I would not be able to sleep if I was worried that my sleep numbers wouldn't be good enough. You know, yeah. And granted, everyone is different and everyone has their thing that drives them, but that is just not the way my life is.
Yeah. I wear an Oura Ring and I sometimes notice that if I have a bad night of sleep, I actually don't check it because I don't want to see that my score is really low and then think the whole day, okay, I had a bad night's sleep and now like my performance should be down here. So I guess that's just what it is. So I check it when I think I sleep really well and then it's confirmation bias. Basically, that's how I use it.
Yeah, well, that's smart. That's smart. It's funny. I take all of my wearables off. I just, I don't want to think about it, right? I want to sleep well, be restful, dream whatever I'm going to dream, wake up the next day, and then I put everything back on. Of course, then my Garmin wigs out, right? Because it says I haven't had any sleep and blah, 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 blah. But yeah. Honestly, who cares, right? This stuff is to benefit us and not to drive us insane.
Exactly. Well, Sandy, let's start to wind down. We've been going for a while now. And if people want to get in touch with you, if they want to pick up your book and learn about your systems, from this book, the new book, and then also the previous book, how do they find you on the internet and connect with you?
So super easy. My website is Kaufmann Protocol, and it's one F and two N's, Kaufmann protocol.com. A lot of information is on there. And I just recently sort of redid everything. So the master table has all the numbers for 40 some agents is on there. And it's funny because someone was asking me the other day, like, isn't that proprietary information? I'm like, yeah, no, I don't care. So it's all there. As well, my email address is on there. So if people want to ask me any questions, that's fine. And then I try to put anything that's relevant in terms of podcasts or anything I find sort of relevant and interesting on Instagram, which is Kaufmann Anti-Aging.
Perfect. And your books are available on Amazon and I'm assuming other bookstores as well?
So actually, no, it's just Amazon. Just Amazon. What's really interesting about longevity is I went to find publishers and they really like fluffy books, right? They want a book that someone can read in like in a few hours and feel really good about themselves, you know, eat well, exercise, etc. And every time I went to a publisher, they looked at my book and they're like, yeah, this isn't going to sell. They're like, you need to change it. And I'm like, yeah, no. So I'm never going to be on the New York Times bestseller list, but I write these because they're informational and people like them. And there seems to be some sort of like cult following because everywhere I go, people seem to know who I am, which is kind of entertaining. But anyway, as a consequence, they are only on Amazon. Both books are there.
It's a shame that the incentives aren't quite aligned properly. And I know from reading your previous book that there's a lot of information there. It's digestible if you've been around this stuff for a bit, but you also distill it nicely for the layperson.
Thank you. Thanks. No, I like to think that I do, but apparently I haven't distilled it enough for publishers. So there it is. Yeah. But you know what? They don't have to read it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One more question and then we'll do a quick rapid fire round and call it a day. That question is, if there was a burning of the books and all knowledge on earth is gone, but you get to save the works of three teachers, excluding yourself, who do you choose and why?
Ooh. Oh my God. That's a good question. Eric Larson, because he writes the most amazing historical books, because I'm a huge history buff. probably a biochemistry textbook, because that's what I'm always looking in when I'm cheating the system. And Bob Breyer, because he's the most informative person on ancient Egyptian history.
Wow. Two history books.
I'm an absolute ancient history fanatic.
Very cool. It has a lot of lessons and wisdom to be gleaned from ancient humans.
No, it is. They're just like us, you know, just different life challenges. And I'm so enraptured by ancient history. I find it just amazing. In fact, here's a funny thing. So I was listening to ancient Egyptian history, and they were talking about the medical scrolls that talk about immortality. So I broke down and I bought all of the medical papyri versions that I could. Wow. I can't read hieroglyphics. I was planning on, and then I got lazy, to try to steal Egyptian medical secrets. Awesome. Became a bit of an obsession for about 6 months. And then I realized that, yeah, they didn't have that much stuff that we don't already have. But I tried.
It's a cool idea. I like it. Innovative.
Yeah, something to do, right?
Yeah. All right. Quick rapid fire round now.
Okay.
What's one thing that you changed your mind on in the last year?
This is supposed to be quick. And that's a good question. I take less metformin.
What area of your own health and performance are you currently working on?
Getting my legs back into shape, because I took a beating with foot surgery, which is why I bought the Catalyst suit. Mm-hmm.
What is one thing that your tribe does not know about you?
Oh, gosh. I'm pretty open with pretty much everything. I don't know. It's a good question. Okay, so this is goofy. I have applied to NASA. I cheated on my blood test or my urine test. And I may be going to live in a biodome to mimic life on Mars in January.
Wow.
I fly to Houston in 2 weeks to see if I make it through the next level of applicants.
Very cool. That sounds like an epic two truths and a lie.
Well, I'm hoping that NASA doesn't listen to this, because they're going to be like, I kind of lied on the medical history. It said, do you take any drugs or supplements? And I wrote, no, which was a big old federal lie to NASA. I'm hoping they truly do not listen to this.
No transcriptions for this one.
Yeah. No, don't send this information to NASA. I'll get thrown out of the Mars mission.
Will not do. All right, Sandy, are there any parting thoughts you want to leave listeners with that have made it this far through all of the agents and lifestyle things so far? Any final tips or takeaways?
No, I think the only thing that I think is kind of important is the idea that you should have a longevity pyramid. And I sort of have things that I do on a daily basis that are important. I have things that I do on a monthly basis. I have things that I consider like once a year. So whenever I look at a new therapy, I think, okay, when am I going to do this? How avidly am I going to do this? And how is it going to fit into my longevity pyramid, with the recognition that as we know more and more stuff, that's going to change. But at least I know that I'm sort of working in a positive fashion.
And is that pyramid individual for everyone? Or is there like certain things that are consistent across the population?
No, so it just depends. I think diet, exercise, like, for example, I sit in front of a red infrared light every night. BioLite was kind enough to give me one a few years ago, and I thought first it was kind of crazy. Now I absolutely am obsessed with it. So I love that. Other people like the pulse frequency things. Other people lie on crazy beds. Other people like, you know, the hot sauna, the cold bath. Mm-hmm. Jumping into ice is just insane. I would never do that. Some people love it. So yeah, it's on their longevity pyramid. It's just not on mine.
I see.
Right. And then once a month or so, I do IV exosomes every month. I do my bolus senescent cell therapies once a month, that sort of thing. And some people are into like the plasmapheresis. That's sort of like the new deal, which I think is maybe reasonable, maybe not, whatever. Some people like to do the rapamycin boluses, blah, blah, blah. So everyone's a little bit different depending on what risks you're willing to take and how old you are and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, perfect. Sandy, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an honor hosting you and discussing some of this new work you've done. And also, at a later point, we'll circle back and we'll pick up what you're working on, perhaps deep dive into the lipid peroxidation protocol you have and anything else that you're working on.
Fantastic. And, you know, and if I get really lucky, we can do a podcast from fake Mars.
Awesome.
Right?
That'd be quite the unique podcast.
Right? That would be kind of fun. I don't know if NASA would let me do this, but what? We'll pull it off somehow. It'll be great.
Yeah, we'll see. And I'm sure I'll see you at some point at one of these health and wellness conferences that are now worldwide.
Absolutely. The world is now open, and I absolutely look forward to that.
Perfect. All right, Sandy, thanks again. Take care.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.